Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
You know, Dan, year-end is upon us, and we need to do all of those nasty little tax and regulatory reporting things that I don't know about you, but I hate to do. Jeff King, he's a product manager from Greatland Corporation, one of the country's leading providers of W-2 and 1099 products, is here to talk about some of the things we should be doing. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Well, you know, Jeff, first, tell us a little bit about Greatland. Tell us a little bit about your products and how they ease year-end reporting and how people can learn more about them, your website, et cetera.
Yeah. So Greatland Corporation has been around for over 40 years. So if you think back in the history, we've been started in the compliant business forums, and we've moved into a technology organization helping customers electronically file their year-end W-2, 1099, 1095. Those are the Affordable Care Act forms. We've been doing that for a long time. And so where I focus is on the technology. We've got small business software applications or paper, but the software applications that can help small business figure out what their filing requirements are and help them to file a W-2 or 1099 miss really easy. In fact, we've spent a lot of time making sure that customers can give their feedback to us. If you go to our site, we've got over 22,000 reviews, and we filed over 10 million forms last year. And so this is really where our focus is, and small businesses is right in the heart of where we spend our time.
Well, small businesses have a lot of new forms that over the last 8 years have been placed on them by the previous administration. Do you think that the regulations this year are going to be easier or harder than they have been in the past?
Well, when it comes to regulations for this year, it appears that they're going to be pretty much the same as what they've been in the past. For W-2s and 1099 miscellaneous, which are the most popular year-end forms, those have been hanging around for quite a long time. But the nuance is making sure you're keeping up with regulation changes. And so it's less about a new form and more about deadlines changing, for example. Like this year, the filing deadline is January 31st for both your recipients, your employees, and to file to the IRS or the SSA, the Social Security Administration. And so that's really one of the things for small businesses is keeping up on those regulation changes. And so that's one of the key ones this year is that January 31st deadline. Yep. The other thing that has come up in the last couple of years is the Affordable Care Act. And that's been the biggest thing that we've seen that has jolted the small business industry with new forms that they need to file. And that's been the change that we've been trying to help customers understand what is my filing requirement? Do I need to file? How do I navigate these forms? And so that's been where we've spent a lot of time helping the small business industry evaluate navigating that new form.
Well, I'm going to ask one more question and turn it over to Dan. One of the things is whether a company falls under the Affordable Care Act or not, employees, et cetera. Do you help them figure out if they, whether they hit that magic 50 employee or 100 employee threshold, or is that something they have to figure out on their own?
That's something that we help them out with. The regulation for the Affordable Care Act is so confusing, so difficult, and so we've put together a whole slew of resources. In fact, a customer can go to, or a business can go to greatland.com and find our Affordable Care Act reporting, and we've got a slew of resources to even help them go through a decision tree, whether they need to file, what form they need to file, even how to navigate certain areas on the form. And so that's a great list of resources so that they don't have to pay a consultant or spend hours and hours and hours trying to figure it out on their own.
On that note, Dan, I turn it over to you.
Good, thank you. I want to follow up on your last comment. Are those services on your website, are they free, or do you have to pay for those?
Those are free services. Yep, they're available for anyone who goes to it. The website actually is yearly.com, Y-E-A-R-L-I, and we've got a menu item called 1095 Reporting, and if they go to that, then all of the resources there they can read and click through, and we'll help them with that.
I have a couple of several small businesses, and I use a CPA because I just don't have the time to do all the paperwork and to study all the regulations to make sure that I'm current. Are most of the small business people that you work with, are you working with their tax advisor, or are you working directly with the small businessman who's or woman who's trying to do it on their own?
Yeah, we work with both. We work with accountants who are working on behalf of multiple clients to complete their year-end reporting, but we also have a significant number of small businesses that we work with directly. And that's really where a lot of our resources are helpful because, you know, as a small business owner, you would know you've got your focus on your business. You want to be able to, you know, be maximizing your revenue, taking care of your clients, and this is just one of those necessary evils that you have to do at the end of the year, and you got to decide, hey, am I going to pay for someone to do this for me with an accountant or a professional, or am I going to find an application or another resource that I can do it myself cost effectively?
Yeah. I want to go back because I want you to explain again, because I think this decision tree piece seems to me on the surface to be an incredibly valuable tool that you're making available for free. And I want to make sure that our listeners understand what this tool can do for them, that it is free, and how do they get it again. So let's go back to the decision tree. How is it used? How would a small business, one of our listeners, use this decision tree?
Well, there's a couple of things to think about in the beginning, and first is knowing what forms you need to file. So if most small businesses are considering what, you know, if they have employees and they have W-2s they need to file, most businesses have contractors, and so they have 1099 miscellaneous that they need to file, and then some businesses have to file those Affordable Care Act forms. And so that's the first problem that we run into is, you know, we'll have businesses calling us saying, hey, what do I need to file at all? And that's the starting point, is knowing which forms to start with.
So let me just back up a little bit. Does your service help a small businessman find out if he needs to file?
For the Affordable Care Act, absolutely. Yep, we've got the decision tree, and we can talk about that here in
sure.
a little bit to help them decide if they have a filing requirement. For W-2s, it's pretty easy. If you have an employee, then you have a filing requirement. And for 1099 miscellaneous, if you paid that contractor more than $600, then you have a filing requirement. And so for the W-2s and 1099, that's pretty straightforward. For the Affordable Care Act, it gets a little bit stickier.
So I want to go back to the decision tree, but you just said something that causes me to think about another question. We've had numerous guests on our program who are talking about the changes in the work environment, and not only what happened to the previous 8 years under the Obama administration, but what's happening now in the Trump administration, and that corporations who are trying to grow their businesses, whether they're small businesses or big businesses, are paying incredibly close attention to overhead, and there's a lot more opportunities for gig employment as independent contractors. And my, I guess my question, are you seeing an uptick in the number of people who are contract employees as opposed, or contractors as opposed to being employees of corporations? Are corporations using more gig contract labor?
It's a great question, Dan. I don't have data that tells that small businesses are switching from employee-based workforce to contract-based workforce. I do know that the 1099 miscellaneous continues to be one of the top driving small business forms out there, and that's consistent with what we've experienced here at Greatland also. And mm-hmm. And there's a lot of simplicity with that, you know, with knowing it's the $600 limit and filing that with the IRS. And then the other thorny part is with filing it to the state as well.
Sure.
That's the other thing that a lot of businesses aren't aware of. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's go back to the decision tree. How do most of your customers use the decision tree process?
Well, for 1099s and W-2s, the first is just understanding the basic requirement that I've got some filing to do. What we try to do in our software application is actually help them as they add or import data into it. We'll actually present them with some options of whether they've got state reporting requirements and help walk them through that throughout the application. So there's a lot of resources there. For the Affordable Care Act, the resources that we have on our website allow a user to understand the act in simple terms, and then when it really comes down to the details of the tree, it's a simple questions to help them understand whether they have minimum essential coverage, how much was that coverage, and we'll actually help them decide what even boxes to fill out on their forms. And so it's actually a great resource for them to go through those details, and then they can choose whether they want to continue to use the expertise of Greatland through their software applications or not from there.
So when a potential customer comes to you and they have a need, what are they typically buying from you?
Mm-hmm. Yep. When they reach out to our organization, we're going to present them with some options on whether they're looking for technology or whether they have a software application already and they're seeking just the compliant paper documents. When they get to the technology, we're going to help them with whether they're looking for a web-based tool or an install-based tool. And then on the website, it's going to be, how do we get your data in? You know, your data is housed in some accounting application that you already have today, and so let's find out how you want to get your data in, whether you want to key it in or whether you want to import it. And then we'll just step you through your best options based on how many forms you need to file, the amount of forms, whether you have a state reporting requirement. And so it's really we'll hold their hand all the way through getting them to the application, and then once they get in it, one of the things that we try to do is just make it really, really easy. And so once they get into the application, then it will just walk them through, and oftentimes I'll hear someone say, "Is that it?" And then it can be done.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Have you ever worked really hard to land an order only to find out that you lost it? There are times where we really want an order from a prospective client, and then you find out after all your hard work, the order went to a competitor. We learn wisdom from our failures much more than from our successes. It still hurts to lose the order, but losing an order teaches us a great deal about what kind of business person we really are. So here's your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day. When you find out that you lost the order, don't send an email. Send a letter to the head of the business unit that placed the order. Tell that person that you are disappointed that you didn't get the order, but that you'll work even harder to get the next one. Ask him to tell you what you can do so the next time the order's in play, you can win it. This has been Dan Perkins with your recalculating.biz small business tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Yeah. Do you find that people are gravitating one way or the other in terms of online service versus install on their computers?
Yeah. Yeah, the majority of movement is to web-based applications. As I've been watching the industry change over the past decade, I've seen the desktop type of reporting method is becoming less of a preference for customers. They don't want to install software every year. They don't want it stuck on one machine. They prefer it to be on a web-based tool. They prefer it to their data to be in the cloud so they can access it when and wherever they want. And I've also seen business owners in accounting, there's a changeover. And so you've got kind of an older generation that was comfortable to paper reporting and desktop tools. And in a lot of cases, when you get set in a preference and set in your ways, you're actually just going to choose not to upset the apple cart on that. You're going to just keep it the way it is. And the younger generation is coming in saying, look, I want something that I can import data in. I want something that's cloud-based. I'm used to working with web apps, and so that's a comfortable user experience for me. And so we're seeing a great drive to web-based tools now.
Jeff, what about the concerns of supplying you with all of a great deal of the company information? What about security?
Yeah, security is a huge thing, and I would say a couple items with that. If you're looking for a web-based tool, first off, you got to look for a company that's reputable, that's been around for a while, that's trustworthy, because we are talking about secure data, and it seems like every day you're hearing something about someone whose data has been hacked. And so a couple of things to think about. One is this company reputable? Have they been around for a long time? Two is what security protocol does this organization use? One thing that Greatland has done is we're SOC compliant, and so that's a third-party review of our organization for the security of our systems, our facility, and just making sure that we're not just saying we're secure. We've got an independent party that's reviewing us and making sure that we're secure. The other thing is, we're in the age of reviews, of hearing what people will say about your organization, and look for a company that's transparent in their reviews, that you can see whether they've got, 100 reviews or 20,000 reviews, because then the customer voice is going to be the strength of saying, hey, these guys take care of us, they give us filing compliant help. The tool is easy to use. Their support is helpful. Those are the key things to be looking for as you're thinking about a web-based app.
So how do potential customers, how do you attract them? Do you do it? Do you have a sales force? Is it all web-based? What is your sales and marketing strategy?
Yeah, we're mostly a web-based presence. We certainly do have a sales force, and the cool thing with that is We're a little old school in that way, where we've got real people on the other end of the phone. So when a client calls in, you can actually talk to a specific person. And so we'll certainly help you if you find us on the web. We'll give you all the resources we've got out there, and you can make a decision. You know, there's a whole generation of people that don't want to talk to anybody, and so we can be available for that. But we also have a voice on the other end of the phone as well, and you can call in and you can consult with one of our sales reps and really just ask all of the questions that would make you feel comfortable, whether it's security, whether it's data, whether it's just help me find the right app for my business. And so our presence is both.
But you don't have a field sales force where there's people out knocking on doors?
Nope, we don't. We're not going to knock on any doors. And in a lot of ways, it's just not necessary with our app. It's really easy to just get in, create an account, and get started. If we need more support-based tools, we can do a screen share. I don't know if you've ever done one of those before, where you share your screen and through modern technology we can do all of that without having to knock on anyone's door.
So what other products or services do you have besides the W-2 and 1099?
Well, that's really where our strategic focus is, and so that's actually what we consider a strength, that a customer comes to us, and this is what we're thinking about all year. And so when they come to us and they say, I'm thinking about this for the first time in 11 and a half months, we're ready for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's really our core focus. And when it comes down to it, it sometimes seems like, well, you're just sending a form to the IRS or you're printing a copy for your employee. But from our vantage point, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, because you've got to decide, how am I going to get it to the IRS? Do I have a state filing requirement? What's the most efficient way for me to get it in my employee or my contractor's hands? And so those are the type of details that we focus on to make sure that a business is taken care of.
Okay.
Dan, I'd like to jump in here. It seems to me that you guys don't do too much celebrating between now and Christmas with all the people that are coming on board. And suddenly say,
That's exactly right. December is a busy month, December and January for sure. And we do our celebrating in the summer. But, this is a great time of year to have conversations with clients and make sure that they're preparing for the year and that they know what to do ahead of time. That's the thing that kills me the most, is when someone calls me late in the month and they haven't started thinking about it. And thankfully, we've got some resources for them to get them in on time. But December is busy.
Well, I got to say, Jeff, you are very comfortable with what you're doing. You also seem to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah, in a funny sort of way, you never thought that you'd get you'd be working in the tax form business, but we find our own passion in that. We just enjoy helping businesses, helping make this painful process easy. And in a weird way, we can find some fun in that.
It's really been enjoyable, Jeff, listening to you. I'm sure our listeners did as well. But can you say your website one more time?
Yeah, absolutely. The website is yearly.com, YEARLI. And we're with Greatland Corporation. And guys, it's been a pleasure. I've had a great time talking with you, and hopefully this was helpful for your listeners.
Right. Thank you.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His energy is amazing, and at 74, he proves that you can still have a great deal to give others if you just try. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Kathy Littlefield is a former HR professional and chair of the business department at Pierce College. She's here to talk about how business owners can encourage work-life integration and, more importantly, why it would be beneficial to the company to do so. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Well, first, tell us a little bit about your background and then a little bit of how you got into this work-life cycle and your thoughts on it.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm the faculty chair and associate professor in business here at Pierce College in Philadelphia. And for those of you who may not be familiar with Pierce College or from the outside the Philadelphia area, Pierce is a nonprofit private college that has been around for about 152 years. And over our history of time, we've adapted ourselves to meet the needs of adult learners by equipping them with the tools necessary for success in the workplace. And combined with what I do here at Pierce, I have 27 years of work experience in hospitality, manufacturing, even the wedding industry, and higher ed. And all of those require shift work, long, strange, odd hours. But of those 27 years, 16 of them included my time as an entrepreneur and as a small business owner. And as you know, as an entrepreneur, the lion's share of the business, it falls on the ownership. And the business that I was in, all of our work tended to work towards the evenings and the weekends. So at the time, I was raising a young family. I was also attending grad school, working on my doctorate. So I learned very quickly how to balance my work and my life. And as an entrepreneur, it's one of the first things that you have to realize is that work doesn't stop at 5 o'clock, that when your name is on the door, that you answer the phone and you respond to that email immediately because essentially it equates to food on the table.
That's a pretty good start. But Kathy, I guess my first question is, why is it so important to have this work-life balance?
Well, work-life balance is about how you can get your staff and your employees to integrate their work and what they do at home. And until you have a balance to that, you're essentially asking them to split their time between their work or their career and their personal life and at home. And even the word balance, it implies that there's an equal time spent in each area, and that's not very realistic. But work-life balance really started back long before current conversations nowadays. So back when you think about, even the 1800s, women and children, their time working was limited so they could continue to meet the needs at home. And then as we got into, the middle of the 1900s, the Fair Standards Labor Act, it put a limit on the number of 44 hours for the work week. But still, even at that point, doctors and emergency personnel, they ended up going on call because things don't happen between 9 and 5. As the glass ceiling came about and it started to crack in the 1980s, that's when really the notion of work-life balance took effect. Because even if you look at work-life balance, it's not a gender-based issue. This is something that even men deal with. So if you have a father who happens to be a little league coach for his son or his daughter, and they have a game on a Thursday evening, he has to be able to get to that field in time to help coach his child. Well, how do you do that when these games tend to happen at 5:30, 6 o'clock at night, and perhaps, he doesn't finish work until then? By having this notion of work-life balance, it enables him, as well as all the other family members to be able to make it to this game. And that's just one example of why it's necessary. Because we don't balance things anymore. It's actually it's about how we can get them to work together.
Well, Dan, I'm going to turn it back over to you now.
Thank you. I'm fascinated about your illustration and being an entrepreneur for many decades and having four children. I know that there were times in their lives that I wasn't at the ball game or the play or whatever it was. But I was building a business. I was a small business person. I wasn't an employee working in an office or for a corporation. I was working for myself. And the time constraints or the time issue is dramatically different with an entrepreneur than a salaried employee. And so those are two dramatically different groups of people, at least I believe they are. Not that they love their families any less, but they have two different work ethics in what they're trying to achieve. How do you get a balance in that situation?
Well, I think that's where the vernacular needs to change, and it's not so much a work-life balance that you're working on, but you're working on the work-life integration. And this integration is the blending of how do you continue to build your own business and how do you get your children to that little league game or whatever it may be. But that blending of the difference between the time constraints, it takes a lot of communication. It takes a lot of teamwork. As you know, being an entrepreneur, it rarely is just you in the scene. If you have a family, they're just as invested in the business as you are. It comes down to how do you manage your time? How are you able to say, okay, if I take 2 hours and I go to the Little League field right now so I can even be a spectator of my child's game, I have to find a way to work smarter so that I can take those 2 hours and work it later. Doesn't necessarily mean later in the day. It means how can I be more efficient, more effective, so that I'm able to take those 2 hours and utilize that for some family time. Something that I experienced as an entrepreneur was I included my children in the business. Obviously, they were young. They were not of payroll age by any means. But you know what? They helped by sweeping the floors. They helped by running the vacuum. They helped by doing little basic things, because by allowing them into the workplace, by allowing them into where mommy is, it made it so that there was less of a disconnect. I was able to build a bridge with my children and with me while I was working because, you know, as you're the owner, guess what? You can take your kids to work, right? You don't have to answer to your boss that says, oh, you can only do that when it's take your child to work day. So I included my children. I included my family members in the business itself. We even went as far as having T-shirts made so that the kids could have their own shirts that had our company name on it. When I think back to it now, and now that my kids are teenagers, some of our cutest family pictures are from when they were helping us, and they would just smile from ear to ear because they were in my back pocket. And I think by taking the approach as an entrepreneur of how can you make this work, you make it work by inclusion. You include those around you, and even your employees that work for you. Get to know their families. Get to know their children. Have events where you can bring them all together, because then they're going to understand why their parent can't always be home. Because the children can then make a connection as to, well, you know, you're not here, but I know who you're with. And, hey, I remember when we did such and such together. And it's a great way to help bridge that gap, because you want to have a bridge there. You don't want to have two silos working in separation.
So how does I can understand how an entrepreneur could do those kinds of things. And having some memories of working in an office with a 150 people staff and marketing budgets of tens of millions of dollars, does corporate America understand this need and do they support it?
Corporate America has to support it. And whether it's formally supported or it's a shift that's happening, it's being supported very strongly by an organization called Society for Human Resource Management. It's known as SHRM. And SHRM is the largest human resource management professional society out there. There's over 280,000 members in over 160 countries. And SHRM is the lifeline between human resource managers and corporate America and executives. So essentially what SHRM does is it allows a human resource manager who would be the department who implements different activities, different policies. It connects the C-suite with the person who is the most baseline level hourly employee, and it allows the executives essentially to realize that, hey, you know what, we do need to do this. By having SHRM support this, what it does is it enables human resource managers to propose ideas of contests, perhaps celebrating time off. If you encourage your employees to take their vacation and that time off is no longer taboo, you're encouraging your employees to celebrate their time off. Have competitions where they bring in photographs from their vacations. And even in the day of a staycation, maybe people are not traveling far, you can still photograph that and have fun with it. So by embracing ways of engaging employees when they are not at work, it allows them again to draw that connection to, hey, you're not here. We're going to cover you while you're on vacation. We don't expect you to check email. We don't expect you to be doing work while you're on vacation, but we want you to come back and be energized so that now when your colleague needs to go on vacation, you can help support their absence. But you do this by having a conversation, having a dialogue of, hey, what did you do while you were away? And by doing that, it helps bridge that gap.
Do you find, though, going back to my question, do you find broad acceptance of this idea in corporate America, or is there still a lot of reluctance?
I think there's acceptance. I think the term broad is difficult to define in this context. What makes it acceptable is when you have broad-reaching buy-in from the leadership, from the executive leadership. When they can model this work-life integration, it's going to filter down through the entire organization, and that's going to be what generates the acceptance. When you have buy-in from the executive leadership all the way down, it's going to become a way of life. It's not even so much a term that's used anymore. It's the way that the culture of the organization is shifted. I do believe that organizational cultures are shifting because they have to. When you are going for employee satisfaction, when you are striving for that ultimate customer, you have to have an employee base that is happy. You have to have an employee base that is engaged and vested in your organization. So by having work-life balance modeled by your executive leadership, that's giving you that cross-organizational buy-in. That is what's taking over in corporate America. But like I said, it's difficult to define, is it broad-reaching yet? I think it's probably more broad-reaching than we know because organizations are succeeding. Those that are not succeeding have disgruntled employees, and it makes it difficult.
That's a very interesting point. I think in terms of the psychological environment under an economy that did very poorly over the last 8 years, and people, a lot of people were worried about their jobs, and I'm sure that pressure of worrying about whether they were going to have a job weighed on them when they were going to work. Not that they were, and because they were worried about their job, they would worry that they didn't want to make mistakes in performing their job for fear of losing their job. So that the psychological dynamics of the last 8 years has probably been pretty tough on a lot of employees because of as they watch friends and neighbors lose their jobs, that worry probably transferred to them. Now that the psychology has changed, is it possible that more corporations who were in a survival mode for some part of the last 8 years, seeing their businesses starting to grow again, would be more receptive to your concepts?
I think absolutely, without a doubt. When you think about 8 years ago, technology was not as vibrant as it is now. And the notion of being at work meant that you had to have your feet on the floor in the office. Well, with technology being the driving force, work-life integration is even easier. So employees can work from home. They can telecommute. They can work from home. Here at Pierce, we have work-at-home status, so we are able to dictate our own schedule. Working from home allows the employees to have somewhat control over where they're doing the work, as long as their work is getting done. And that's why you have to be a results-oriented organization, too. Everyone knows what's expected, whether it's completed sitting at a desk at a certain address or whether it's being completed at a desk at a person's residence. Technology can be that bridge. And the organizations that failed probably did not integrate technology. Those that struggled over the past couple of years, if they are infusing technology into their workplace, then they have the ability to incorporate workplace integration, work-life integration, and their employees are now going to be able to complete their work tasks without having that fear of losing their job because they're not boots on the ground. They're not, their feet are not at their desk at that address.
So I would agree with that. That's at least part of the key. I have read conflicting reports of telecommuting, and that the dynamics of a social environment where there's an opportunity to exchange ideas and thoughts in seeing the personal reaction to those ideas and thoughts is significantly diminished when you're doing it on computer remotely. Any thoughts on that?
I would agree with you, but I would also add that technology does not mean that you have to simply type your text. Telecommuting does not rely strictly on email communication back and forth. There's a lot of video conferencing tools, even free conferencing tools that Google has. Google Hangout, whether you have all you need is a camera and a microphone, and most computers have that. An organization that is going to be vested in this might even equip their employees with laptops that have all the technology that they need. They may purchase video conferencing software. There's softwares out there like Zoom or Skype that now allow you to actually see the person. So you're having live, real-time dialogues. You can have full conferences. You can have almost like a Brady board, a Brady Bunch family, when you look at all the different faces on the computer that are integrated into this conversation. So the thoughts of telecommuting being very isolated, it doesn't have to be that way. You can even set it up where you have core hours in which everyone has to be available online. And then there's flexibility for the start time and the end time, and each individual can decide how they want to begin their day or end their day, but that core concept of those hours is designated, and then anybody's got to be online. So it's the same thing as if you walk up to someone's door and you knock on it on their office, you know, you ding-dong them, and there they are virtually, and you can see their face, and you have that real-time communication.
Dan Perkins here for Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your veterans' tip of the day. Did you know that the suicide rate for women vets is 12 times that of their sisters in civilian life? Did you know that 1 in 4 women vets feel uncomfortable about talking to people about their mental health issues? Did you know almost 600,000 women vets in America are suffering from PTSD? It's time to help. It's time for all of us to encourage our sisters, mothers, and wives to get help by contacting their local VA hospital, clinic, or community-based health care center. So if you know a woman vet that is suffering, go to va.gov and find their nearest VA facility. This has been Dan Perkins of Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us with your veterans tip of the day.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Dan, can I jump in here
sure.
and ask a question? You know, it's interesting. I've been listening to you. Yeah. The trouble lately is our guests are so good, I'm just listening rather than talking, and that's a compliment to you. But I guess my question to you is, we are so controlled by our emails. I think I saw a study that emails take an average of 3.2 hours a day. in most jobs in America today, non-manufacturing jobs. But how do you handle that, and how do you turn it off?
That's where an organization needs to set up some parameters. If the flexibility is there for allowing employees to have flexible start times and finish times, there still needs to be some dialogue about when is it finished. Are you finished at 9 p.m.? There should be no expectation of responding to emails after a certain time in the evening or at a certain time in the morning. And then it needs to be accepted practice that you don't immediately respond to an email. When it comes time to dealing with clients or customers, again, let them know what the expectation is going to be. That if you email my organization at 10 p.m., emails are going to be responded to in a timely way, but it's not necessarily immediate. With smartphones in so many people's hands, it's very difficult to find someone who's not doing email as they're walking around or they're on the train or even waiting for appetizers at a restaurant. I was out to dinner last night, and you wouldn't believe the number of people that were on their phones while at a restaurant. But it has to come from the leadership, and it has to come from setting clear expectations about when it's okay to disconnect. I think the conversation needs to not be when do you disconnect, but when do you connect? When do we expect our employees to be responding to emails? And again, that has to come from the organization, because in the absence of that communication coming from the organization, it goes back to the notion that Dan was talking about how you feel like you, as an employee, you feel like you have to respond immediately, because if you don't, the next employee in line will, and then your job is in jeopardy. You can't put the fear of connectivity in employees, or else you're going to lose them because you're going to burn them out. And that's not a safe thing to do. Workplace or work-life integration is about helping the employee getting it to work, as opposed to putting the fear of you have to always be on, because you can't always be on. When you're always on, you have a very short duration. And organizations, their greatest asset are their employees. And the longer you can keep your employees, keep them satisfied, keep them with that shared vision of what the organization is all about, you're going to be able to sustain that.
See, I hear you, but all my life I've been told that that opportunity is going to knock just once, and you better be there to answer it. Yet you're saying, well, wait a second, you can hold it off. You can say between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. you're not available. Am I hearing that correctly?
I think it depends on the situation. Obviously, it depends on what type of organization it is. I will say that as an entrepreneur, I couldn't turn it off. I wasn't able to, because again, it went back to that was my dinner on the table. So I felt the need to always engage. That's a very tough situation to be in. It is hard to turn it off. It is hard to say, I'm not going to check my emails. But there's a priority that you have to have. Even if it's a matter of helping your employees realize how important a subject line is in an email. If it's of not a consequential nature, then a typical subject line would work. If it's something that is of urgent nature, hopefully that can be communicated in the subject line of the email. It takes discipline, and that's not something that you come by naturally. So you have to help yourself. You have to help your employees in learning how to discipline. But quite honestly, Don, it is. It's very difficult. And I don't know that there is any one answer, because situationally things will be different.
Well, Dan, I want to ask one more question and back to you. I'm now going to go into the always dangerous area of gender. Women are expected to put the food on the table and do the job, do their job as well. What do you say to women that are different from than what you say to men?
being a woman, I I need to filter it, I suppose. No, what I think is important is that it comes down to the dialogue, and hopefully a woman will be in a respectful relationship in which it is understandable that, you know what, there needs to be help at home, that you can't be expected to do all the cooking, do all the laundry, do all the carpooling. If that's the way that it works in that household. You know, nowadays, so many families rely on two incomes, and it becomes somewhat of a balancing act as to who's going to take care of what at what time. Even if it becomes a matter of, you know, setting up a schedule at home of who's got what duty this week. I don't believe that work-life integration should be gender-based, but I do agree that it probably is because, you know, to be honest with you, I'll ask my husband sometimes at 7 o'clock at night when I get home, what's for dinner? He goes, oh, I don't know. And I, you know, and I always have to have something in my back pocket as, okay, well, here's plan B. And I'm certain I'm not alone in that. But it comes down to communication, you know, letting him know what my schedule is. And again, having synchronized technology. We have a shared calendar, so I know what his schedule is, he knows what my schedule is. And when families are able to do that, it takes this away from being a gender issue to being a family issue. And when it's a family issue, you've got more people who can contribute than just the man or just the woman, just one partner versus another partner. And again, utilize the tools that we have at our fingertips. You know, when we started our business years ago, it was 1999, we didn't even have, gosh, I think if I had a flip phone, it was brand new. But where we are today, it's so easy to share communications between instant messaging, between text messaging, between social media. It's very easy to help that so that it does become less of a gender issue and it becomes more of a family issue.
Dan, I turn it back to you. We have about 2.5 minutes.
I was fascinated by the conversation that you were having with John or with Don concerning women. do you see as what's going on with the let's call it the new sexual revolutions and revelations? That there's going to be significant changes in the workforce going forward?
Significant changes. I think what's going to come out of all of this is more emotional intelligence. I think that regardless of the shifting that's happening right now in the workplace, I think whether the leadership is male-dominated, female-dominated, or it's a mixture of both, I think that what needs to happen is that the leadership needs to take on the self-awareness, the motivation, the empathy, the social skills that are all prominent in emotional intelligence. And by including emotional intelligence, it's going to help level that landscape that's shifting right now. It's not to say that the movements that are happening are not necessary. I think that it's a way of every organization can now take a different stand or a more purposeful stand in making their organization more meaningful for all genders. And, you know, when you combine the proponents of emotional intelligence with the tools of engagement and efficiency and the compassion and the whole shared vision that has to happen for work-life integration, I think it's going to have a soothing effect on the workplace because it's going to be a matter of you're not coming into a firestorm every day. You're coming into a workplace where you feel valued and you feel important, and that's regardless of whether you're male or female.
Thank you very much. Don, back to you.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Your website that people could go and find out more, Kathy Littlefield, Chair of the Business Department at Pierce College?
Absolutely. Our website is www.pierce.edu. And Pierce, we were founded by Thomas May Pierce, so our spelling is a little bit different. It's P-E-I-R-C-E dot E-D-U. We always say there's no Pi and Pierce here. So we have PEIRCE.edu. And then, of course, my bio page can be found within the faculty or even by drilling down into the business division and then finding faculty there. And there's a few videos in which I'm speaking about our programs.
A link to Pierce College, PEIRCE College, will be on our website at www.recalculating.biz tonight. Kathy Littlefield, thank you so much for being with us, and have a great day.
Thank you both. I certainly appreciate it. Enjoy your day, too.
Thank you.
Tell me, Dan, tell me about your latest book.
My current book that's coming out, I should say, is Why Can't Grammy Remember Me? And it's really the first book written for children between the ages of 9 and 12 and their families dealing with dementia. Dementia is a growing problem with the elderly in the United States and around the world. And we are not very well informed about what's going on, what's happening. So I wrote this book in the form of a mystery. And I have two little girls, 9 and 12, who have a magical power to be able to seem to be able to find things that are lost. And so they go to their dads and moms and they say, you know, we work all over the neighborhood helping people find things, and we seem to find things. And their dad says, yes, you have a magical talent to do that. And they said, we'd like to start a business to see if we can help other people. So they decided to start a business. The two girls' name are Hudson and Charlotte, and they start H&C's Lost and Found. If you've lost it, we find it. And so they build a business, and they convince the dads to build them an office and a treehouse in the backyard. And they get busy making posters and flyers trying to get customers. And their dads take them downtown, and they put them in the windows and on the telephone poles and light poles. And they go home, and first week goes by, and nobody comes. And the second week and third week, and nobody comes. They're really, really dejected. And the fourth week comes, and there's a knock at the door. And they walk over and open the door, and there's a young man standing there with one of their flyers in his hands. And he says to them, my dad says the reason why my Grammy can't remember me is because she's lost her memory. And your flyer says you find things that are lost. Can you find my Grammy's memory? Well, they don't know anything about memory. So they take his name and they go see their dads to see what can happen. And the story evolves into how they learn about what dementia is and what's going on in the body when somebody has dementia. And then they decide, while they can't find their customer's memory, they can help him build the tools to retain her in his memory. And so at the end of the book, there are about 10 to 12, 13 things that families can do together to work on to preserve the memory of Grandma and Grandpa so the generations can know who these people were. And that's the story.
What a great book. When will it be available, and how can people get it?
Well, it'll be available on Amazon.com. A lot of people who have read it, who've had moms and dads that have been stricken with Alzheimer's or dementia, tell me that they really now begin to understand what's happening in Grandma's brain. And we took a different approach. Rather than do the typical brain cross-section, I work with the artist, and we design highways in the brain. And there's a brain of one of the little girls and the brain of Grammy. They both have highways, roads. But where the girl's brain, everything is green and go. Grammy's brain is full of no left turns, do not enter, stop, no right turns. So all of the messages that need to come from our brain get screwed up, and we can't function. Great illustrations, though. Wonderful illustrations.
Well, say goodbye, Dan.
All right.
Time for us to go.
Thank you for joining us. And by the way, if you didn't hear all of today's show, you can go to recalculating.biz. And you can pick up this show and past shows to expand your knowledge as becoming more successful entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us,
and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success. Recalculating, a program designed to help you be successful.